Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome again. This is the Azure Podcast, episode number 330, being recorded on May 14th. This is Evan. I've got Sujit, Cynthia, and Kale today. Unfortunately, our special guest had something come up, and so he could not make it. So we decided to kind of wing it a little bit. And you know, we'll get into our topic in just a minute, but before we go there, anybody want to talk about some of the news?
Sure. I got a few in there. We're going to start off with blockchain because that's where we always should start. This week is actually kind of interesting because this is New York's Blockchain Week usually, which is a series of conferences that happen throughout the week. There's one called Consensus. There's another one called Ethereum. So those things, actually, Ethereum was last week and Consensus is this week. But in addition to those, we had a couple things. One was we're doing a virtual hackathon. So for anybody who's interested in hacking around on some stuff with blockchain, Microsoft are sponsoring, I think, around $20,000 worth of stuff over there. So you can go hack away on that. No one on the podcast here can do that. But any of our listeners out there can, if you're not a blockchain or a Microsoft employee. And basically, I'll put the link in linked up. You can check those out. It's mostly around our dev tooling and some of the stuff that we built service-wise inside of the Azure. And then the second one around blockchain was Pegasus, which is a company that we work with in ISV, has released their Ethereum suite, the first one, first offering on the Azure Marketplace. So check it out. It's a pretty cool offering for private blockchains. Up-and-coming company doing really cool stuff, working with the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. So good deal. I had three other ones, but I'll just do one, and then I'll let the others talk. But the one that I want to do is Minecraft. So there was
damn it, you picked that one. Okay, go ahead.
No, there's kind of a cool article up here about, you know, especially if you're home looking for interesting things. It was talking about Azure Cosmos DB and some of the, you know, things that they have to go through in terms of scale to handle something like the size and scope of what Minecraft is, things like how they do procedurally generated worlds and all the kind of pieces that go into that. Obviously, there's always a pressure there when you have, you know, tens of thousands or even millions of users kind of tuning into something, that scale is going to be an issue. And so always avoiding lag and making these things as highly performant as possible is key. And so one of the things was basically they walked through one of the patterns that they use to help scale Minecraft using Azure Cosmos DB. This one particularly is around the event sourcing pattern, but you know there's other areas of the application. This is just one aspect of it. And it kind of walks through like what they do, how they did it. They even walk through like a little bit about, you know, looking at competing technologies, like even inside of Azure, like tables versus CosmoDB and why they made the choice they did. So it's kind of a nice thing if you're architecting applications, even if it's not Minecraft, that could be cool.
Neat.
That's it.
That's cool. Yeah, the one, you know, I'm always a fan of AKS, like Kendall as well. So one of the things that came up recently was, you know, AKS always had this API server, which we get for free. That was always a nice thing. But, you know, free means they couldn't you couldn't get any SLA out of it. So the SLA was 99.5, which is kind of best effort at best. So now they've offered a financially backed SLA. So, you know, if you pay a little bit of money, you can get the API server for AKS, which is the endpoint to which you send the commands. That can, will now be backed by an SLA, and depending on whether you're using the AZ's availability zones and non-AZ zones, which coincidentally is the topic of our discussion today, but depending on which one you use, you will get a 99 for non-AZ's or 99.95 for AZ's. So I think that's something that a lot of our customers are really interested in, and I think it's going to be a lot of interest in this announcement.
Yeah, that's cool. I wanted to. This is me. I may not be in support anymore, but you can't take the support engineer out of me. We announced that FileSync is removing TLS 1.0 and 1.1. I think we actually were. I'm in the final stages of negotiating of getting the team that's kind of driving that through all of Microsoft onto the show. But this is just my little reminder to everybody, like, hey, we are dropping TLS 1.0 and 1.1. They're just not safe anymore. So it's going away on different services, piece by piece. It is a global effort, but if you haven't done the work now, you need to be doing it. It's coming. I will also have to confess, I show my age because I still call it SSL when I'm talking to people, and SSL hadn't been a thing technically for 6 years, something like that.
Yeah, what's TLS? No,
yeah.
Yeah. That's actually, it's surprisingly that there are people that are still using it out there, especially I remember Windows XP had TLS for a long time. And of course, now that's completely gone. So
yeah,
hopefully this is going to be the end of it.
And then on the topic of security, there's now integration between the Azure Security Benchmark with Azure Security Center. Back in January of this year, we announced V1 of our security benchmark, which is essentially a number of best practices and recommendations to increase the overall security and compliance posture for your workloads on Azure. And now there's a direct integration with Azure Security Center, meaning that there's now automation for monitoring what your compliance or what your security posture is compared to these security benchmarks that we publish for our customers. And you'll get recommendations depending on each of the different Azure service you have. And there's also going to be action items for you to see how you can mitigate some of the issues that you're seeing that is not fully fulfilling the compliance or the security that you want to reach.
Yeah, I know a lot of our customers use things like CIS, some of the well-known, kind of more broadly used benchmarks. But I think when it comes to the cloud, you need a specific set of benchmarks. And I think this is a good feature of ASC to get the best of breed of the cloud security and do analysis on all your servers. It's a good thing. Definitely like it.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that it keeps getting updated as our services gets updated too, because there might be more configurations or more features available to be more secure and more compliant, and the security benchmark will be updated accordingly as well.
Cool.
Excellent. Yeah. No. So, Cynthia's about fell out of her. She about fell over there laughing at Suji.
You both talked about like the two same words in sync.
I know. What's like?
I think you guys were reading the same line on the teleprompter. That's what it is. Whatever they put on the teleprompter, Evan and Suji will read.
Okay? Kale is a. Oh no, sorry, that's not on the teleprompter. That was on the fly. So we were talking earlier, like I said, we had a last minute scheduling glitch. So we thought we'd talk about availability zones and regions. And let me just share. I had a customer that I was working with, actually helping another engineer, and this customer had deployed, I don't even know what the app did, but it, it's built based on a couple of VMs. And they had, I think they had four VMs in an availability set, right? And so they looked at that and said, okay, well, we've got multiple fault domains, and this thing should stay up, right? This should never go down. And we had, this was probably, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, we had, a power failure in one of our data centers, where they were doing some maintenance on some racks, and they had to, they were basically fixing the power distribution, the secondary one. While they were fixing it, the primary flipped, right? A breaker tripped. We had a power surge and a breaker trip. So, we lost 100% power to these, a set of racks. And the customer and this other engineer, you know, we're looking at going, wait, how can this happen? You know, why, how could I ever lose all my VMs in an availability set? Isn't that the whole point of an availability set? And this got into a whole good conversation about, you know, zones versus regions. So, you know, Cynthia, you were saying you have these conversations with your customers a lot. Where do you find people get tripped up?
I think before we start there, Evan, do you want to explain the difference between the default domains, the update domains, and what is availability set versus availability zones?
Good point. We probably ought to ground everybody before we get into that. So with default domains, and generally this maps to racks when you're talking compute. Default domains is, hey, we guarantee that your VMs in your availability set are going to be split between at least two different fault domains. Right now, the more VMs you have, the more fault domains you might get spread across. But conceptually, what that says is that says that, hey, if I lose a rack, you know, if my availability set splits my VMs between two fault domains, and like I said, a fault domain generally maps to a rack from a compute perspective. If I lose a rack, I don't lose both VMs. Right. So if I lose a top of rack switch or I lose power to that particular rack, right, I don't lose all my other VMs. So that's part of that. The other piece is update domains. And update domains actually is sort of related to availability zones, but it's sort of an independent concept as well. It basically takes that fault domain concept and says, okay, now when we apply updates, you know, if it's a PaaS service where we're applying updates, or if it's cloud services where you apply your own updates, you know, or if it's a host level change, we make sure that we honor your update domain, say, hey, your machines are spread in such a way that if we update one set, it's going to be a completely separate operation from the other set, right? So we're splitting that across those update domains. So those concepts have been around for, I don't know, almost as long as Azure. Right, those two concepts have been around.
I think the cloud services, which was the very first service we had out there, had that concept right there.
Yeah, exactly. And so the newer concept is availability zones, right? Actually, I take it back. Let me step back one more. So pre-availability zones, right? If an availability set didn't give you enough, you know, what happens if, you know, the entire data center loses power, right? You could go to different data centers, right? And we had customers do that all the time. But different data centers bring some challenges, right? Because you got latency, right? If you're going all the way across the country, it's about 70 milliseconds round trip. It's 3,000 miles, 70 milliseconds. And so you don't really want to do that in all your cases. So we started implementing what we call availability zones. And what these are is we say, think about it like I take my data center, and instead of having kind of, you know, two main power feeds, for example, into the entire data center, right, a primary power distribution coming in the data center and a secondary, right, from some local utility. I have three availability zones. Now I have six, two going into each zone, so that each zone has completely independent power, right? Same thing for cooling. Each zone has completely independent cooling system. So I could lose the entire cooling system for one zone. My other two zones are up and running just fine. Right, so you kind of get the benefits of being in a different data center without having to be in a different data center.
So Evan, the zone piece. So as you said with the racks, right? So like an availability set or a fault domain actually maps to roughly like a rack. And then if you think about a zone, is that like the building, like the data center building, or like that?
That's probably not a bad way to think about it. I don't know that it always will map to exactly that, but conceptually, right? I think that's a good way to think about it. Right, if I have these two buildings that have no common infrastructure. They're not sharing utility lines. They're not sharing, you know, cooling, you know, capabilities, right? They're just completely independent. I think that's probably a good analogy.
I do believe, though, that with availability zones, the buildings have to be at least 50 miles apart, I think, because if there's an earthquake,
storms,
and it takes one of the things out, one of the two of those buildings can't be too close to each other. I believe so.
Yeah, you may be right. I mean, I'm sure there's some distance they need to be, right, for that concept. You know, but like if it was an earthquake, right, chances are 50 miles isn't much when it comes to an earthquake, right? You know, so that's really where,
like,
you know, different
things. Tornadoes and thunderstorms. Yep. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, but I think that's a good way to think about it, right? You're even splitting your geography to some extent, right? And so that difference becomes really important when we, you know, so we go back to this customer's scenario, right? They had, so go back to their scenario. They had, let's say for the sake of conversation, they had four VMs in an availability set. That should be at least two fault domains. It might even be more. I have to go back and look at the math. But in this case, the problem that we had was far enough downstream in the power infrastructure that it took out multiple racks. And so in this case, Murphy's Law being what it is and statistics being what it is, at the scale at which Azure operates, right, and the number of VMs that some of these customers have, right, even a statistically rare chance will happen at some point, they lost multiple racks. So where we lost multiple racks, so they lost all of their VMs at that point. And, you know, the customer's first response was, well, wait a minute, how can you lose all of them? Like, that's an availability set. It's supposed to happen. And it's, and they're actually, the availability zones versus AV sets, they're actually different SLAs, right? So an availability set is 995, so not even quite three nines. An availability zone is going to be four nines, 9999. Right? And that's because, again, you lose some of that shared infrastructure that cuts across those.
But while customers are considering this from a architectural perspective, are they different? Can they deploy the same application utilizing either availability sets or availability zones? Or are there any changes they need to make to make sure that they can take advantage of the extra SLAs?
Yeah, although I just had a temptation to ask Kale, Kale, is blockchain availability zone aware? But so yes and no. So from a code perspective, from a customer deployment, you know, perspective, from the code that customers drop on top, you don't really have to care. You know, now what you do have to do is, for our services, there are certain tiers of the services, or there's like V1 versus V2 that are zone aware, and then some that are not. So if you want to take advantage of zones, in some cases it's as easy as picking you want, you know, the SKU that is availability zone aware, like VPN gateways, I think have that. There's a lower end SKU that is just basically availability set aware at its layer. And then, you know, there's a higher end SKU that is zonally aware. App services, I think, has the same construct, right? They have kind of higher and lower tiers. Now, where customers may have to care is if you're just deploying a VM, so let's say you're deploying two VMs and they're not in an AV set, when you deploy them, you actually can pick your zones, right? So you can say, I want this VM to be in this zone and this VM to be another. Because VMs, like individual VMs, don't really, conceptually, they don't really care about zones because they're a single VM, right? But you don't have to change your code. You don't have to change, you know, anything about the way you're deploying it. You just have to make sure that you're picking the right destinations for your deployment, or picking the right, you know, service SKUs to make take a zonally aware thing. And more of our services are lighting up as zonally aware. In fact, a lot of the services I think these days are just shipping zonally aware if they're new.
The perhaps the one kind of thing that I would watch out for is if your application is making assumptions that, hey, you know, my servers are going to be close to each other, and therefore I'm always going to get that much latency, then they should remove that from their minds, right? Because now the servers are technically going to be, could be in three different geographies, far apart from each other, let's put it that way. So they may need to adapt their application code to allow for slightly more latencies in some scenarios.
Absolutely.
So you're basically taking latency for the sake of getting availability, right? It's kind of like two different ways you want to go. You can't have both.
Absolutely. Now, I do know, and I don't think we publish numbers on this because it's a little bit different zone to zone, and we're always trying to optimize. But there is additional latency between zones, but it's not nearly as much as when you talk between data centers. So if, you know, unless your application is super highly sensitive to latency, I know a lot of customers that they don't even see the difference, right? Because their app, like, you know, a couple, you know, 10 more milliseconds or something like that doesn't matter to that. But yeah, absolutely right. If you're doing some, I don't know, some, you know, MapReduce type thing where the nodes all have to talk to each other all the time, very frequently, yeah, availability zones could potentially cause trouble.
So thinking about this, going back to when we started here, Evan, if I'm a customer who says, I want my stuff to be available all the time, like obviously 100% is not real, but like I want it to be available as much as possible, I'm willing to pay or do whatever I need to, would you say that they would do something like, okay, they're going to use availability sets as well as availability zones, and then even turn on like the geo features to get the even extreme DR case kind of thing? Or what should be the recommendation for people who say, I just want my stuff to run all the time, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's the conversation that I end up having with a lot of customers is kind of where's that line, right? Because everything you do sort of always ends up in with additional resources deployed to some extent, you know, especially when you start saying, okay, I'm going to be in multiple zones, right? That may, if, you know, and it also comes down to, am I designing for kind of reduced functionality or am I designing for full functionality, right? If I'm willing to go with reduced functionality, let's say I need two servers to run my standard load. Well, if I need a, if I can't run off of a single server, then that means I need to be running in such a way that I always have two, or I have some sort of auto scale, you know, turned on, again, which may bring some cost. The reality is we do a lot of, and there's a word for it that just left my head, but you can basically do an aggregate SLA across all these different, or you can calculate it, right? And say your SLA is, you know, blah. The number is always going to be smaller than your best SLA, right? The service that you build that has the best SLA, because everything else is a multiplier underneath that. So really the only way to get, you know, the 5.9s and 6.9s that some people are shooting for, it you're layering in DR plus HA, right? And the less you can stand the downtime, like, you know, I was working with a customer, they said, hey, if we lose an hour, that's $1 million, right? Because it's our busy season and you know, we're billing blah. And during this time, when if we lose it, we just, you know, the amount of money we lose is just outrageous. And so for them, the rest of the year, they run with just AV sets. But then during their busy season, they go, okay, we're going to run with AV sets and traffic manager and multi-region. And like, they're just laying everything in there because the additional infrastructure spend is nothing to compared to what the cost would be if it went down.
I know when AKS recently adopted this feature where they used to use availability sets in the past, and they introduced availability zones. And the way that they do it is that you can specify up to three zones, I believe, that you get deployed to. So when you deploy the cluster, you can say, I want to use zones 1, 2, and 3. They're just numerically yep. numbered. It's not like, it doesn't mean like where they are specifically. And then it just, you know, just kind of spreads their servers across all of these zones. So it's pretty convenient that way, you know, from AKS perspective, this Kubernetes is just seeing them as three different servers. They just happen to be a little bit far away. But it just added so much to the SLA just by doing that, you know, just yep. jumped up immediately.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key, right? If you can do it, your best bet is to leverage the services that have zonal awareness, because then you sort of get it for free. I mean, yes, there's a cost with it, but conceptually, you don't have to do anything different than check a box or pick a slightly different SKU, which is, you know, kind of the best around. Because then, if you know, again, it's a business decision at that point, not a technical decision, right? If I choose to, if my business tells me I need it, then my business is willing to pay for it. If it's not, versus I'm having to make some technical decision up front while I'm, you know, architecting or designing my app.
The other thing I was curious about, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot here because I was just thinking about this, but like I've seen in the portal, for instance, if you do something we'll call dumb, but like, so essentially if you just have one VM and you just have it running there doing something, now you get these notifications that like, hey, that's not fault tolerant. You know that, like, it's like, you know, that nice little, it's like Clippy in the background or whatever. It looks like you're
Azure Advisor, I think, tells them. Yeah.
But is that something that even goes further now? Like it'll tell you, you know, some of these other features, not just that you have this one single point of failure here, but it will actually help you with the SLA. I don't know. I'm just throwing this out there. I wasn't sure.
I will send you my $50 later, Kale. I just due to COVID, right, we had a whole bunch of customers that changed their work profile, us included, right? Everybody did. And a couple of us were sitting around one day and said, you know, I wonder if a bunch of customers have stood up new VPNs or stood up new network virtual appliances to do edge connectivity, and they don't know how to manage these things. They don't know how to check the CPU. They don't know how to check connection count, all that kind of stuff. And we went, With some help from another person on my team, we went and wrote some new Azure Advisor Alerts to look for exactly that. And that's sort of where we're going as a, you know, as a concept and as a overall, you know, Azure thing is like, we've sort of probably going to yell that by somebody somewhere, but we've kind of eliminated wherever we can, you backing yourself into a corner, right? That doing something is just going to break you out of the gate. But what we sort of are not as good at yet is what are the things that it might be okay if you run that way, if you're very well aware of it and you're very comfortable with it. But most of the time, people don't know everything about these services that they're using, right? They're just learning them. They're learning how to manage them. You know, they're a DBA. You got told to spin up an AKS cluster, right? And so that's sort of where we're going is how can we take that knowledge, that insight, and then share it there. Now I know I want to know all your dumb mistakes, Kale, so that I can write alerts on them.
No, right. The feedback I got about Azure Advisor just all up, and this is probably a little, you know, detour here, but was it's kind of interesting for customers who are using multi-cloud and some of that stuff. You would go, every time I log into Azure, it's telling me like, hey, dude, you can save money if you do this, or you have something over here you need to deal with. And he's like, to be honest, it's awesome. And most people like ignore it, but I think it's actually really awesome that you're kind of helping people both save costs, but also like the security aspect. So I think the feedback I've heard is like, this is awesome.
I'll pass that on to my peers that work on that team and tell them that, you know, yes, there's some hate mail, but there's people that love you as well.
And doesn't it let you see across different providers as well?
Not today, to the best of my knowledge, although I think Security Center might do
maybe that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, because I think that some of that stuff it does, there may be some agents that go with it. Mm. So where else do you know, Cynthia, you were saying that your customers just kind of struggle with this concept. Where do they struggle with it?
I think just the thought of like how do they make the decision? And two, going back to what we were just talking about earlier, like how figuring out their own SLAs and what needs to be available for their customers versus how that maps to how they can orchestrate their services across different Azure services.
Yeah, I guess it's like anything else, right? Where you're sort of trying to work through all the technical and the and now you have to care about reliability as well. Mm-hmm. Before we used to just kind of assume it was reliable, at least in the projects I worked on, it was.
No, but I think it's a good point to like, because the cost, right? If you can figure that out, because you can go like I was saying, like, oh, I just want it to be available all the time, right? Like naively. Yeah. And basically what that means is a cost, right? So like, and maybe some additional latency. So someone having this power to say, to go back to the executives and say like, yes, we can do that. And here's what that looks like from a cost profile. And this is what we would get for that. Or we can do this other one here. Like you were saying, Evan, even if it's a busy time of year, I think it's super cool that people are thinking about that almost like an auto scale of like, yep. Hey, I don't need all that stuff now. So let's cut back on cost because it's not really necessary. We can tolerate 5 minutes of downtime now, you know? So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, this was good. Any other questions before we call it a day?
Well, I mean, I think we've talked about the extreme about, you know, scale sets versus availability zones, and then you have multi-region, right? That's kind of the spectrum that we're talking about. And it almost seems like availability zones is just nicely falls in the middle, right? It's a good happy medium where it's not super expensive, but I think the advantages you get right out of the gate, I don't know why anybody would not use this option by default. I think this should be the default option for all of our services, if it's not already, including just customers putting our VMs there. Why would this not be the default? Like what?
I think one of the restrictions is that it's not available in all the Azure regions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yep. Yeah. I know. I know we're driving to get it there. And you know, cause I think customers want it, but I think it's to your point, Sajid, right? Like it is really that nice, happy, or maybe Kayla was you that said it. It's this really nice, happy medium of, you know, multi-data center. That's a lot of work. I really have, you know, I got to do stretch clusters and SQL Server always on and whatever else. Zonal, I sort of, if I can tolerate the slight increase in latency, it is fairly transparent to me at that point. And it gives me a ton more, reliability versus just AV sets or kind of out of the gate. right, with end-zone stuff. I think what will be interesting is as more services get launched, you know, built from the ground up with zonal already existing, I think we're going to see more and more services that just out of the gate, they just do zones to start with, right? You don't even have to, you as a customer don't even do anything about it. Like, it just happens, right, yep, for you at that point.
Cool.
For this is people that are trying out, is there a possibility for them to test whether or not they can stand the latency? Or is this kind of a, you do it or you don't do it?
You're saying like, could, like, if it turns out the latency is too much, could you like turn off zonal
yes,
at that point? You know, that's a good question. I think of most of the services that I've looked at, you know, like VPN Gateway is the one that I know I was looking at not too long ago. Like, it, to go from the zonal to the non-zonal, I do believe you have to tear it down and recreate it. I don't think you can just, you know, resize it, right? Like you can, you know, in some cases. So I, you know, because there's just sort of a different deployment style for this stuff. So yeah, so I think there's going to have to be a little bit of tear down. But I think if I were thinking about general concepts, I would say, you know, if your application is really chatty between two tiers, you ought to not, you shouldn't do zones, but you ought to do some testing and thinking before you go full bore. If your app is a typical app that's just, you know, it's not super, like SAP is super, super chatty, right? It's just MapReduce is super, super chatty, right? Like if you're not doing that stuff, I'd start with zones and then I'd fall back if it doesn't work for some reason.
Yeah, actually, they actually have one that goes the other way, right? Yeah, I think they call it an affinity group. So yes, you can actually deploy Azure. You can tell Azure, no, I want to be in the same data center and only put me in the same data center because I cannot tolerate the latency. And so there's actually, you can even go the other way if you want to. So again, it depends what your application profile is in each of these situations.
Yeah, I actually think placement groups might break the fault domain rule. I'd have to go back and double check, but I think, you know, because it's sort of like, to your point, Sujit, like you're going after, I don't care what the downside is. I need, you know, sub millisecond latency and I'm willing to deal with the other repercussions of that, but I need that latency for the way that my app works.
Yep. That's a good topic. Thanks for bringing it up. Thanks, guys. Good
discussion. Yeah, no, this was a good conversation. Any last questions?
I think this was awesome. I think the thing I took away from it, though, and that, like, listeners to consider is, like, making sure you understand what your resources are, because as Evan said numerous times here, you know, some of these features are lit up on specific, you know, stuff, and it's growing, obviously, but making sure you're aware of, like, which resources make up my entire application or my solution, and making sure which ones are, you know, available to use zones or not, so that you're very clear about where your fault problems will be. You know, I think that's what I'm taking away from this is, you know, making sure you understand where all your deployments are and what the SLA is for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Great. Cool. Sounds good. Well, see you folks in a week.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.